Hello, welcome to the first of the Canadian Journalism Foundation's JTalks Live webcast series. I'm Anna Maria Tremonti, the host of this series, also the host of the CBC podcast, More. Now, the JTalks speaker series explores pressing media issues, and this webcast series, launched amidst COVID-19 public safety measures, is going to focus specifically on the issues around the coronavirus and how this pandemic is impacting our knowledge, our health, and our livelihoods. If you'd like to tweet about the hashtag is JTalksLive. Now, the CJF, before I go any further, the CJF wants to thank the generosity of JTalks series sponsor, BMO Financial Group, and in-kind supporter Shishian for making this all possible. These webcasts will be 40 minutes long. This first one, we're going to just start in seconds. I'm going to chat with our guest for about 25 minutes, and then I'll go to your questions, but feel free to submit your questions at any time. And we also want to give you some helpful notes about the webcast. If your internet quality is poor, click on the thing that says, click here to switch stream to view at a lower bandwidth. The video quality will probably decrease, but the audio should remain the same. If you're having technical issues, click on request help on the right top right corner of the webcast page. Your help request will be emailed back to the email address that you provided. Now, to ask a question, simply click on the questions tab and click on the questions button. A new window will open to type in your questions. And you may ask a question at any time during this, and I'll be getting your questions as we go along. So if I'm looking down, I'm looking at my phone because I'm getting them texted to me. So there we go. Now, in this first webcast event, we are talking about disinformation. Now, there has been a CJF poll conducted by Maru Matchbox. 90% of Canadians, according to this poll, believe they will be exposed to misinformation about the coronavirus before this pandemic is over. I'm guessing a whole bunch of those Canadians have already been exposed to this. There's an overabundance of information that makes it hard for people to distinguish between what is accurate and what is not, whether it be through social media feeds or via text. Verified information from responsible news sources matters. So my first guest is Jane Litvinenko, a senior reporter with BuzzFeed News, who is based in Toronto. She focuses on disinformation, cybersecurity, and online investigations. She has uncovered state-run social media manipulation campaigns, cryptocurrency scammers, and financially motivated bad actors spreading disinformation. Her work also brings accessible fact-checking to wide audiences during times of crisis. So who better to talk to today but Jane? Thanks for joining us, Jane. Hi.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So much to ask you, but before I go any further, maybe you should define some of these terms, misinformation, disinformation. Explain to us what we're really dealing with by definition.
Yeah, it's really important to really understand what it is that we're talking about here. So when we say the word disinformation, it's the deliberate spread of bad information. And when we say misinformation, that deliberate component is lost. It's when you pass on bad information, but accidentally, think of somebody in your group chat sending you a text message. And really, this can take the form of any medium, whether it's an image with text over it, a video, an article or a post, or even comments on social media networks. So there's no one unique way in which misinformation and disinformation presents itself.
So in the midst of a worldwide pandemic, how big a challenge is misinformation and disinformation and stopping it?
We've been covering mis and disinformation here at BuzzFeed for many years. And with COVID-19, this is really one of the biggest, if not the biggest, disinformation events that we've ever seen. And the reason for that is because just as the pandemic is global, the information about the pandemic is global. So it has been a really huge challenge for fact checkers and debunkers everywhere.
And this is at a moment in time, not only where we have a global pandemic, but we have the global technology that can amplify and replicate at levels we just haven't seen. Am I right?
Yeah, absolutely. Bad information has existed for as long as humans have existed. That problem is not new. What is new is the ease of reproduction and the ease with which it can be spread. A copy and pasted message can be forwarded on within seconds. A bad website made to look like a news organization but really spreading false information can be created in minutes. And it's that speed that is particularly important when we talk about global crises, because that speed allows for bad information to fill an information vacuum, which is when we are all very, very thirsty for good information, for understanding what is going on. But of course, either reporting or investigating takes time, whereas creating something out of thin air doesn't take as long.
And also, it's complicated by the fact we are talking about a health issue, which is, but also economic issues, but you see conspiracy theorists joining in here, you see people with real political biases joining in here. You've got a real convergence, haven't you?
Yes, absolutely. So up until now, we've seen many different strains of disinformation, whether that's conspiracy thinking, misinformation and disinformation, whether that's political strains or health misinformation. And now it seems like every single one of those audiences and those categories are all on the same story. And through that, there's a convergence of narratives that's happening, but also a convergence of audiences that is happening. With an event like this, something that is bad for your health is not only being pushed by, say, people who don't believe in vaccinations, but also people with political drivers behind them and people with financial motivations.
And so can you give us an example of some of the dangerous stuff that you've encountered, that you've tried to debunk, that you've, you know, tried to warn people about?
Yeah, we've been debunking disinformation about COVID-19 since January. And it really is a very, very vast field in terms of the types of stuff that we've had to look at. One of the top things and most dangerous things is bad health misinformation. Health misinformation is particularly dangerous because right now people are incredibly anxious, they're incredibly panicked, and they really want to find a way to either avoid getting this virus or getting a cure for this virus, which of course there is no known cure for the coronavirus at this moment. So health misinformation really is incredibly damaging at this time. And this is anything from supplement sales to sales of a substance called colloidal silver, which doesn't necessarily have much health effects aside from disinfecting wounds, I'm told, to more traditional sort of cures like eating a lot of garlic or eating a lot of citrus or drinking water. And that misinformation can really, it's really difficult to stamp out. I brought you guys an example, I brought you guys a video to show you how one piece of health misinformation can go from one medium onto other mediums and really morph along the way. If we can play that video, that'd be great.
This is Dr. Dan Lee Dimke. The novel Wuhan coronavirus, now known as SARS-CoV-2, and the disease it causes, COVID-19, have been declared a global health emergency by the World Health Organization, wreaking havoc on lives and economies around the world. But this virus has an Achilles heel, an exploitable vulnerability that is shared by most upper respiratory viruses and all other known coronaviruses. They are remarkably fragile. Though they can survive easily for weeks or even months at temperatures near or below freezing, these viruses die within just a few minutes when exposed to higher air temperatures.
All right.
Their aversion to heat.
So I think that's enough of that. So this video is several minutes long. It was posted to YouTube and since has been removed. And it essentially says that the virus, falsely, very important to note here, that the virus is susceptible to heat and breathing hot air from hair dryers or from saunas can kill the virus, which it cannot. And just to show you very quickly, even though this virus has been removed from YouTube, it then and fact-checked by very credible fact-checking partners, Facebook fact-checking partners, which means that the social media network itself takes actions to limit the spread of this information. It has taken on different lives through text messages, whether that's that video being forwarded or some parts of it being written out. I won't play this for you, but it also became part of an audio message, which was this very long sort of 5 minute audio of just terrible health information. And it has spread all around the world. It has spread to different countries, has spread to different languages. And some people have falsely claimed that the advice came from UNICEF, and UNICEF itself has had to say that this is not accurate. And not only that, but we've also seen elected officials and representatives repeat this claim. So the Okeechobee County Commissioner has repeated this claim and has since had to apologize. So that sort of gives you an idea of how prevalent this misinformation is and how different it can be from the original starting point.
Excuse me. Also, on one hand, it sounds almost absurd. On the other, but it's very damaging. If people decided to try this, we're looking at something that could really hurt them.
Yeah, absolutely. So for the heat, depending on how hot your hair dryer is, you could damage your esophagus. Mm-hmm. If you follow the health advice of drinking water every 10 minutes, that's not necessarily great for you either. And with supplements, although people do take supplements on a regular basis, if you take too much of a single supplement, that can also be equally damaging to your health. So this health misinformation can really make the bad situation worse.
At the very beginning of that clip you showed us, this man introduces himself. He's a doctor. And I've seen a couple of these things, like all these people, they claim to be, or maybe they really are doctors, but that doesn't necessarily mean anything in terms of their credibility in passing on this information, does it?
Absolutely. We've had all kinds of people sort of crawl out of the woodwork or build on the existing sort of false reputations that they've already created for themselves, claiming health credentials, claiming authority, even when they don't necessarily have those credentials. They're not virologists, they're not real doctors. What that does is it really confuses the information environment for people at a critical time. You can really be forgiven for misunderstanding that video as real health advice. The man says he's a doctor. He speaks in a very authoritative, calm way. And he takes the time to break down what he says the characteristics of the virus are. So if you're not deeply familiar with how this virus acts or virology or how it works, you can really quite easily fall for this bad information.
And, you know, as we're talking about this, I have to talk about the elephant in the room and talking about voice of authority. We are witnessing, of course, that the stories around hydroxychloroquine, where we have the president of the United States who is championing this and urging people to take it. Then he says, well, talk to your doctor. But even his own medical professionals are saying, we don't have enough information. This stuff is being tested. How do you combat that kind of information flying at people when it's coming from someone like the President of the United States?
So there's really two important aspects to this. One is that hydroxychloroquine, while extremely hyped, hasn't had peer-reviewed academic studies behind it. And that's really important to note, because right now there's a lot of sort of preliminary research and guesswork that's coming out about the virus. And a lot of the sort of notes or research that we see passed around the internet wasn't necessarily meant for the general public. It was meant to be shared within the academic community to sort of exchange information or exchange interesting tidbits that they found in their research and in their treatments that might not necessarily go anywhere. But because of the nature of the internet, what happens is those studies either get taken out of context or misinterpreted. And of course, the United States president is not the only global leader who's spreading misinformation. One other good example is the leader of Belarus, who is saying that saunas, going to a sauna, will cure the coronavirus. And people there have had to self-isolate, even though that is not the advice of the authorities in that country, because of the bad information that their leader has put forward. And as a matter of fact, we've seen social media networks take down posts and videos from global leaders for spreading misinformation. So this problem is by no means unique to the United States.
And that makes it more important than ever for all of us to figure out how we can spot things that we should follow up on, to check on. So let's keep talking before I ask you for some of those tips. You've got another good example. You put it up on Twitter. It's an orangutan named Sandra. Yes. Take us through that story.
Yes. Okay. I'm going to open up my trusty PowerPoint. But before that, it was a fairly innocuous video, and people tend to get very mad at me when I debunk animal misinformation, which, understandable. We all really want to believe that animals are doing well in this time. It really brings a lot of joy to people. But it was a video of an orangutan washing her hands. It got something like 100,000 retweets on one of the tweets. But here's what it looked like, and here's how I debunked it very quickly, just so folks understand what this looks like in practice. So this was the video. You've likely seen it. It came from a verified Twitter account, but that Twitter account wasn't of a journalist or an elected official or anybody who would have information about the virus. And this video sort of gave me pause because of that, because this account wasn't necessarily a journalist or a figure of authority. And there was two things that I noticed about the tweet. As you can see, this was pretty early on. One is that the video came from elsewhere. And two, I just noted the date that it was posted on, April 1st. And also it was about noon. So by clicking on that original source, Theo, we very quickly got another version of this video. And we can see, if you look at the caption, that the caption was very closely copied, and that this video was posted first. So what I did is, there is a Chrome extension called InVid, where you can paste the URL of a video that you see, and it will bring up an image of a thumbnail for the video, which you can then reverse image search. Just clicking on that Google image reverse search button shows all the other times when this video has popped up. And you can see here that one of the previous times that it appeared was in November 12th, 2019. So this was before the COVID-19 pandemic was really known to the world. And we see the original video here, which of course had nothing to do with the coronavirus. And it really only took a few steps, a few minutes to verify this video. And that is the case for a lot of images and videos that are taken out of context for the coronavirus. They are quite easy to verify. The thing to do is to sort of hit that pause button and say, okay, how can I look further into this before passing that information on to my friends and my family?
And that raises a good point. And already, you know, I've got a question coming in about that. How do you know that what you're looking at is even mis or disinformation on first glance, enough to know that there's something worth pursuing there?
That's a really great question, because a lot of the times it's a gut feeling. And that sounds like a cop-out answer, but it's not. Because what we know about mis and disinformation is that the reason it works is because it plays on our emotions. It plays on our anxieties. It plays on our panic. It really has a tendency to make our cortisol spike. Or the opposite. I mean, animal misinformation is really something that we call cloud chasing. So really people are just building up internet points for themselves. So if something sparks that extra emotion in you, that is a really good time to take a deep breath in through your nose, out through your mouth, really pause and navigate away from the social media network and into a search engine to see if maybe somebody's debunked it or if you can find more information on what you're seeing. And I promise you, you'll never be sorry about getting more information about what you're seeing.
And so where do you, and that, by the way, that was a question that Anastasia Gliadkovskaya, I've just mangled your name, I'm sorry, Anastasia, sent ahead of time. And it's right in line with what I was interested in knowing from you. Where do you find, is Twitter the worst for this, or is it in... is it also in like emails that people send that they claim to get from other people? Where do you find the biggest problem right now?
So mis and disinformation is really platform agnostic. Wherever there is a social media network or wherever there's a way for people to communicate, we will see that mis and disinformation pop up. So we're definitely seeing a lot of it on Facebook, on Instagram, even on TikTok and Reddit and Twitter. So all the major social media networks. But where it becomes dangerous for us is those closed social media networks. And when I say closed social media networks, what I really mean is sometimes that's Instagram stories, sometimes that's group chats, sometimes it is Facebook groups that are closed or private that nobody else is really meant to get into. They're really places where a lot of information gets forwarded and ping-ponged back and forth. But for us as fact checkers, there's really no way to figure out how that information got into those spaces. There's no way for us to send good information back to them once it has been debunked. And there's no way for us to tell when something is going viral. So to really understand when we should tackle this information. And this has been a really known problem among immigrant communities and in other parts of the world where especially WhatsApp use or Viber or Telegram is really, really high. But for English-speaking North American populations, this is a bit of a new type of misinformation, especially with voice messages, which is why it's something to be particularly careful and particularly mindful of.
Okay. There's a piece on that you were tweeting out today on BuzzFeed talking about even the headlines of the Daily Mail, like mainstream media has something to answer for here as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So with tabloids like the Daily Mail, they're sort of known for either amplifying a story or sort of making connections that are not quite there. That's the case with many tabloids. It's been the case with tabloids before they were popular on the internet. What it really speaks to is the issue of the virus itself. There is a fairly limited amount of information that we know about the virus, about how it spreads, about how it functions. And what we know changes not day to day, but hour to hour, sometimes really minute to minute. So for even responsible news outlets, it's very possible that something that they reported on in January is no longer accurate in February, and what they reported on in February is no longer accurate in March or April. So because that information moves at an extremely high pace, there's a high chance of confusion, especially around advisories on what to do and what not to do, around, you know, whether you should wear face masks or how you should handle your groceries. And that is where we really need to ask our audiences to check in as much as is adequate for them, either whether that's daily or a couple of times a day, because that situation is changing constantly. And unfortunately, we're in a very uncharted territory right now, where even the most reputable news organizations are going to make mistakes just by virtue of the situation that we found ourselves in.
And it speaks to the need to use the internet wider, right? Like to get off social media and look at what else is being said out there. Because if you read something that seems really unusual and you can't find it anywhere else, that's usually one good sign, right? That it's
Really absolutely. I really think that one of the habits that people really need to get into is to get off that social media channel, get off that stream. And like you said, try to find that information elsewhere. So if there's a figure of authority that's cited in a message or a video or an article, go to that figure of authority's website, see if their advisories match what is being said. It's a little bit of extra work, but the internet is not just social media. The internet contains vast quantities of information. And right now, almost every fact checker in the world is on the same story. So if it's a falsehood, you will have it debunked. And if it's accurate, there will be other news organizations that you can triangulate the information across to better understand what the situation is.
You know, it's worth, I guess, pointing out or even just acknowledging that for all of the bad things that come out, we now have people like you. We literally have an army of fact checkers who are out there who can help us figure this out. Every news organization, people like you, who you're dedicated to that full time. There was a time when that wasn't even a job in journalism at this level. And now it's crucial to how we move forward.
It absolutely is. And the skill sets for online verification are not necessarily particularly difficult. As I went through with the Sandra example, it's just a matter of learning a couple of tools that can really help you identify what is accurate and what is inaccurate. And so it makes sense for newsrooms to be able to train their reporters in these skills. But it's also important to remember for regular people that they have the power to verify this information. It doesn't necessarily take a specialist to check whether an orangutan was learning to wash her hands because of COVID-19 or not. It really is a sort of a skill set that people can learn to develop, especially now at a time when good information is so crucial.
You know, we are getting people to send in questions, and please keep them coming if you have questions, and also use the hashtag. Where'd my hashtag go here? I just had it. JTalks Live. If you want to tweet about this, but there's a couple of questions that actually dovetail. So I'll bring two up. One comes from Lib Gibson. When will responsible media stop broadcasting Trump's press conferences? And then right in line with that, a question from Anne Seshadri. I am hoping this discussion will turn to state-sponsored disinformation. Bad actors are knowingly spreading disinformation about the origin of the virus, reactive measures, etc. How can this info effectively be shared with Canadian journalists and their audiences? Got two issues there, but like state-sponsored bad information and that press conference, which is, I don't know where we start. I'll let you just weigh in.
I don't have much to weigh in on the press conferences with the United States president. That is an individual choice from one institution to another institution, and it's an editorial choice that each news organization makes for themselves. But when it comes to state-sponsored disinformation, it's true, it's accurate that it's not only profiteers or people who are looking to make a quick buck who are spreading misinformation on the internet. It is also state-sponsored actors. And what we mean by that is really people who are doing this on behalf of other countries. And we're seeing that in particular with conspiracy theories. We're also seeing it in subtler ways. For instance, China really seeking to bolster what its response and how it bolstered standing in the world by saying that its response is sort of the ideal model, and at the same time sort of highlighting failures of other countries. And that's something that social media networks are aware of, and it's something that we've had to report on as well, because not only does it spread bad information, it also spreads propaganda. It also spreads misleading pictures of how each country has responded to this virus. And I think it's really important to remember here that when we talk about state-sponsored disinformation, we're not just talking about China, we're not just talking about Russia. The Oxford Internet Institute found dozens of countries engage in this type of activity. And so that is a really big part of how we use the internet, but also how people in those countries, what they are faced with, because state-sponsored disinformation is not necessarily always external. It is very frequently internal, focused on the country's own citizens.
I would like to actually weigh in on that. What should they do about the Trump news conference? There is an NPR station, one NPR station in the States, I think, that has stopped running all of Mr. Trump's press conference. However, I believe that people need to know what elected officials are saying as well, as long as they follow with context. For the people who might believe some of the misinformation, and there I'm saying it, that comes from Mr. Trump, there are a whole bunch of people who get it, and it's really important to see who is leading the United States right now, so that people understand what that means. Somebody, David, has written, how does one determine what's a credible source? Fox News, CNN, CBC, BBC. It seems so much of the mass media puts its own spin on information. How do you know which news source to believe? I will say, before I give it over to you, Jane, there's a difference between making a mistake and lying. And if you look at the coverage of what Fox News did, they denied the coronavirus. They fed into the idea that the coronavirus was a hoax. That is very different from getting a piece of information wrong and correcting it. And sometimes the bias that people perceive to be there is not a bias if they're trying to get ahead of a fast-moving story. But when you have an entire network that says an illness, a pandemic is a hoax, and that it was created by someone to impeach the president, you should know the difference. But I'll stop and I'll let you answer.
No, how you determine whether something is a credible news outlet or not is a bit of a difficult question. And the reason why it's a difficult question is because it just requires legwork. You mentioned Fox News sort of downplaying the severity of the virus. But the truth is, early on, even the World Health Organization was downplaying the severity of the virus. And so for journalists, that can be sometimes a difficult sort of situation where we are relying on what the authorities are saying, but the authorities don't necessarily have the full picture. And the information that they are disseminating is changing all the time. So I would say that the best way to figure out whether a piece of news is accurate or not is to try to go to several news organizations and see how their coverage differs from one another and whether it differs. Another great thing to do is to look up either the experts or try to understand how the news organization has arrived to those conclusions. So if a news organization has interviewed a medical professional, like we said earlier, You can spend a few minutes looking up what that medical professional has done with their career, how they have contributed to coverage of the virus, what they have said previously during previous crises. I know that it's an imperfect solution, and it's really asking people to put in time into time and research into their news consumption. But the other thing you can do is, once you do find that reliable source, that journalist or that news outlet or that elected official who you find you can trust, who you find has been consistently accurate and consistently transparent with how that information has gotten, is you can remember that source and keep returning to it. And especially with news outlets, there is a real duty, both a moral duty and a legal duty, to correct errors when those errors occur. So it's important to remember that. It's important to remember that credible news outlets, if they make a mistake, they will try to correct that mistake because of legal liabilities and because of moral issues that not correcting that mistake would bring.
And there's a question from Constantine. What tools would you recommend for fact-checking? You mentioned InVid. What other websites? BuzzFeed, of course. I mean, like, yes. You know, follow what you're doing. You're doing BuzzFeed, a lot of work on this, and I'm reading you all the time.
I would say that another great tool to have in your toolbox is reverse image search. If you right click on an image from your browser, you will see sort of the option search Google or whatever your preferred search engine is. Search that search engine for the image. So that will have the same effect as the Sandra video. Also, just searching keywords can be incredibly helpful here, because most of the time you will have those fact checks surface. In North America, websites like PolitiFact, Snopes, AFP, the CBC, of course, BuzzFeed News, all of us have been working to debunk bad information. So I would say that those are great places to go if you're trying to keep up with what is accurate and what is not accurate, in case you need something to send back to your relatives or friends if they've sent you a bad piece of information.
Riley sent a question. Any tips about talking to someone who believes a conspiracy theory about COVID?
Yeah, so this is a tricky one, because conspiracy theories can really cause people to dig in their heels and to double down on their false beliefs. So I would say that one important thing is to be very, very patient. Convincing somebody that the conspiracy theory in which they believe is inaccurate is going to take a lot of time. Try not to lash out at them, and try to ask questions. Oh, where did you see that? How did you find that? How do you know that? Try sending them counter information in a small, steady drip of saying something like, hey, I heard you mention this and I came across this story. Thought you might be interested. And just overall, be incredibly patient with people who are spreading that bad information, because we will all fall for it. I've fallen for it. And it takes a little bit of time to lead somebody out of the woods if they really sort of dug their heels in on a conspiracy theory. There's really no perfect way to do it except for patience and trying to get that good information to them.
And there was another question here. Just again, as we try to counter misinformation, the stuff that is inadvertently shared, then there was an example of a prominent journalist was sharing some misinformation, Canadian journalist, not that long ago. How do we navigate that?
You know, a lot of people are on alert for bad information. And if you look at the case of the Canadian journalist who spread bad health advice, there were a lot of people sort of telling him, hey, what you shared is not actually accurate and it could be dangerous. and that has been taken down since. And unfortunately, it's a very individual approach on sort of either authority figures in your life or authority figures that you know from afar sharing bad information. It's going to happen whether people mean to or not. The thing to do is to really make sure that the good information follows the bad information, so that if somebody did see that bad health advice, or if somebody did see that really scary text message that your city is now going to be under martial law, to say like, hey, actually the local police department addressed this, here's what they said. Or like, hey, health authorities or the World Health Organization, which has a great myth busting unit, has also addressed this. Here's what they said about this. So really making sure that the good information is still out there and still very easily accessible to the people who you're trying to reach.
I think we're out of time, but thank you for all of this. Jane, we'll keep, but you can follow Jane on BuzzFeed. You can follow her on Twitter. And she is actually working really hard to try to debunk some of these things and let you know what actually, if you do put something up there, you might get a little note from her too. You must have really long days right now.
Well, there's definitely a lot of work, but I would also like to encourage people that if they do see something that they haven't seen debunked yet, to send it to me, and we will do our darnest to get the good information out there.
Well, thanks for that. Thanks for all of your work. And thanks to everyone for watching. Our next show is going to be April 23rd, and we will feature the Globe and Mail's award-winning health reporter and columnist, Andre Picard, and we hope you join us then. Now, stick around for a moment, and you can see how to get updates on the upcoming webcasts and to check out CJF's Doubt It News Literacy Resources for more tips and more tools on how you can help stop the spread of misinformation around COVID-19. I'm Anna Maria Tremonti. Thanks for watching. See you next time.